everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. Or if it's your first time here, just welcome. We got a great episode today. Ben Barlow of Neck Deep returns to the show. It's been 7.5 years since he last appeared, which is crazy. It's crazy I've been doing it this long, but it's wild how much has happened to the band since then. They've gone from this new, young, hot pop punk band from the UK to kind of veterans. Really odd, but really great. It's awesome to see how well they're doing right now. They've got a brand new self-titled record. We get into all of this stuff and more. It's very exciting. Thank you for being here and being a part of this thing. Before I get into that, a few orders of business that I'd like to inform you about. If you want to get in touch with me, it's super easy. You know that old-fashioned thing called email? Yeah, I got one of those. leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. You can hit me up if you got, you know, suggestions for upcoming guests. Maybe I need to get a few more good pop punk guests on the show. I feel like I haven't had that many lately. Oh, that's not true. No, I have. But whatever you want to say to me, hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my emails. And if you want to really help out the show, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club Patreon for just a few bucks a month. That gets you in, that gets you bonus content and other things, access to an amazing community. Shout out to my sinners worldwide. What's up? And of course, it helps me keep the lights on around here, keep this podcast coming at you week after week for free. All right, check it out. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. I'm going to keep the intro short. Let's get right into it. Here it is. My talk with Ben Barlow of Neck Deep.
Hey.
Hey, Ben, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? Yeah, I was just coming to suss it out. I was looking for a quiet place to come and talk to you, but
all good, man.
All worked out, yeah.
I appreciate you taking time from the road. You know, I know how it can be.
I mean, it's waiting around to do a lot of nothing for me. So
okay,
yeah, I'm all good. I'm generally pretty free. Yeah,
no
stress. Yeah, it's the crew guys busting their asses. I'm doing very little. So
I know, right? When was the last time? Like, how long ago was the last time you actually carried a piece of equipment?
Oh fuck! I actually like a loadout, to be honest. if I get bored, I'm like, I'll help load out. Fuck it. Like, I get itchy, you know, twitchy fingers. I'm like, I need to do something. So yeah, there was a couple times on like a Europe tour, I think maybe like a year ago, where I was like doing a few loadouts. So maybe there and then. But I'm usually at our warehouse moving stuff around. If I wasn't in a band, I would probably be good for just lugging shit around, to be honest. That's probably my few talents. Yeah.
No, I find whenever I try to do like help at a loadout or something, the crew's like, dude, just get out of here. You're like, you're just making it harder. We know what we're doing. And I'm like, okay. But yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I'm like a kid. I need the supervision. I'm like, where does this go? They're like, put that in there and then push it over there. I'm like, yeah, I'm helping. I'm helping.
So you're in Boston at the moment at Roadrunner. I know this is a new venue. I've never been there. Is it cool?
It's very nice. Yeah, it's very swanky. It's like right by all like the New Balance campus stuff. So it's all like, you know, a lot of dudes in like gilets and that sort of stuff walking around. But yeah, it's really nice. It's in a nice area, big venue too. I think it just sold out. There's like 100+ tickets left. And then I think they've gone today. So yeah, I mean, it seems to be the deal. Post-pandemic, it seems to be that tickets for at least at our shows, it tends to be like the week, 2 weeks before, just tickets start flying. Like you have all your diehard fans who like buy their stuff way in advance. And then, you know, I think everyone's just like money is, you know, cost of living so tight right now that I think people are waiting until the last minute to know that they can go. And then it's like, yeah, cool. So,
no, 100%, man. Yeah. No, I looked at your tour routing and I was like, damn, these are like pretty sizable rooms. Like you guys are playing the Electric Factory tomorrow in Philly. I saw like, you know, these aren't like, you know, these aren't little 1,000 cap rooms you guys are playing. These are like pretty big. You know, and I wondered about that because I mean, obviously, yeah, post pandemic, it seems like everyone's doing super well, which is great. Mm. But also I'm starting to wonder now if it's starting maybe to catch up with people a little bit, you know, like mortgage payments are higher, you know, the whole inflation thing. It's like, oh, okay, there's inflation. Well, whatever. But, you know, now that it's been like a year of this, I think it's, you know, people are really starting to realize they don't have that disposable income.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see that it doesn't seem to be affecting you guys at all. And you guys are like absolutely crushing it.
Well, yeah, you know, there's always that worry before a tour, you know, you see sales and it's like, okay, they're pretty good. But there's like not like, you know, any band wants to see sellouts, you know, they want to just be like boom, 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 sellout. That's the best feeling for like any band to be walking into a room knowing that. But yeah, that seems to sort of be happening in the bigger markets, like, you know, in the couple weeks leading up to it. And we're always kind of freaking out, you know, same thing in Europe, same thing in out here, same in Australia. So yeah, I think people are just maybe feeling the pinch and like, and to be honest, you fucking asked me to go to a show fucking 6 months in advance. I'm going to be like, ask me in 5.5 months and that's probably when I'm going to decide. So I don't know if it's a combination of our fans being a little older and maybe like a little, you know, a little bit more chill about things, or whether it's like the diehards getting it out of the way. And then, like I said, people wait and see if they've got that disposable cash around about the time. So, yeah, luckily it's working out. And I think tonight will be the biggest show of the tour though. I think awesome. three and a half thousand, I think, which is nuts.
Wow. Dude, that's crazy. I didn't know that room was that big. So it's bigger than House of Blues. That's
big,
crazy.
Man, yeah. It's a big one. Yeah. And, that's like what we do in Manchester back at home, or our last Manchester, headliner, which is like, I guess our closest kind of hometown, that was like 3.5 or maybe less than that. So that's like, you know, doing the same numbers in Boston that we are an hour away from home is pretty crazy.
It's a cool feeling, right? Yeah,
for sure. No, good feeling.
That's awesome. And I mean, you got some great support bands too, Drain, Bearings and Higher Power. Also, you know, buddies from the UK, but yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, obviously these bands are doing really well and they're really cool bands, but these aren't bands that are helping, like they're not playing 3,000 cap rooms. Yeah. So that's also pretty crazy too.
Yeah. Drain are definitely like right on the cusp of, I think they're like pulling around 1,000 on their own now, which for a hardcore band, that's kind of
amazing.
Is awesome. So I definitely think, they're playing a part, and it's cool watching Drain every night. Cause it's literally like, I remember hearing a quote from like Kurt Cobain, and it was like the most exciting time in any band's career is like when they're about to blow up, but they don't really know that yet. And like, it's so true. And like, I feel like Drain are like at that point now, and like, they're like just about to blow up, and it's so exciting watching them. They put on like the craziest live show, amazing front man. And so, yeah, that's been really fun. Like they've generally just been a really good tour, and it's a little bit of a crossover, you know, we're touring with like Higher Power, who are kind of like a emo, hardcore, kind of hard rock, fusion kind of band. Bearings, who are a little bit more in line with us, maybe on the like more kind of like poppy emo side. But then having like a hardcore thrash band, you know, as main support is a little bit of a gamble on our end of like,
totally.
All right, genres don't line up, but like the overall ethos lines up, you know, like it's all feel good music and it's all generally pretty stoked music. So like the crowds are very similar and expect the same sort of things. And so that's been cool. A cool little experiment to see like, okay, can we push the boat out of pop punk a little bit and
totally.
Kind of broaden those horizons. So
yeah,
it definitely worked out. It's been super fun, super varied every night. So
yeah, that's great. Well, obviously, yeah, Silverstein's a little heavier than Neck Deep, I guess, but we had Stray from the Path opening up for us on our last tour. So it was like one of the heaviest bands ever us. And it does, I think, you know, if they do it right, they can really energize the crowd for you.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, and you can kind of feel that leftover energy mm-hmm. when someone like that just absolutely kills it. I think it, mm-hmm. it does make people maybe come out firing a little harder,
yeah.
you know, for your set.
Yeah. They let kids know that it's okay to mosh and crowd surf. They're right. like the litmus test, you know, they're going out there and saying like, hey, do that, you know, encouraging people to do it. And then, you know, by the time you were around, they knew all the ground rules. So they're kind of, primed and ready by the time we roll on. And just like from a personal standpoint, it gets me fucking stoked every night watching a band and like
hell yeah.
watching a band that's like, you know, getting kids crowd surfing, stage diving, moshing. It's like, cool. All right. That's like half my job kind of done. I know what this crowd's up for. And just like, I know if I go out with a similar energy and I'm just telling and just encouraging people to have a good time, then they're going to respond. And yeah, it's good. I generally tend to like listening to like fast, energetic music before going on stage. Like before we go on, we'll spend half an hour, 45 in the green room, just like listening to songs that just pump us up. And yeah, going out and watching Drain for, you know, 15, 20 minutes definitely does a little bit of that too. So
that's sick, man.
Built in stoke bringers, I guess. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, man, that rules. I love all of this. So, you know, it's crazy. I looked up the last time we talked when you did the podcast. Mm. Can you believe it was 7.5 years ago?
Dude, it feels like 4. It feels like yeah. max 5. You know what I mean? It feels
totally,
like
dude.
3 or 4 years. It's crazy, man. Yeah, it seems like it's the same for everyone. Like we're getting into the mid 2020s now, kind of, and it's like everyone still thinks it's like early 20. Everyone still thinks it's 2021. It's like it's yeah.
Yeah, no, I hear like yeah. When someone brings up like 2009, I'm like, oh, that was like 5 years ago. Wait, what? What? No, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
it's so weird, dude.
Yeah. Well, we're at that point now as a band where like, excuse me, where like it seemed like we were a new band for a long time. And now we're coming out of being the new band and being like just an established band that's around. So it's like this weird kind of identity shift. And yeah, and I say that because it does feel like that time just absolutely flew by, you know, like we've been a band for 12, nearly 13 years now. And it was like, damn, I thought we would be a band, you know, this baby band for forever. I thought we'd be 5 years in, you know, forever. So it's like kind of crazy, like feeling that shift and like,
yeah.
you know, how you interact with fans and how you kind of put yourself out there is like, and how you go about doing everything really is like a little bit different now that we've got like, I don't know, a pretty established kind of, footprint out there now, I guess. So yeah. that's been interesting. And that's kind of come along in the last like year or so, I guess, and came along quick.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like all of a sudden you're the old guys. It's like what?
When
we were the kids, and now we're like an old veteran band. Like yeah. people calling us veteran pop punk band, Neck Deep. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah,
I'm not 30. I'm not 30 yet. Calm down, you know.
Very close, clinging on.
I know clinging on. I know you got like 4 months or something. You're clinging on.
Yeah,
but no, dude. Like, I mean, first of all. The reason you're here and talking to me is because you have a new record out, mm-hmm. a brilliant self-titled record that's only a month old. Mm-hmm. I love this thing.
Thanks.
It's just straight ahead, short, tons of energy, you know, and it's really not the kind of self-indulgent mm-hmm. album that maybe people might expect mm-hmm. for like a fifth album. You haven't done one in like 4 years, yeah. you know, self-titled. Like I was expecting... I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting this thing, and I love it.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, I think we had our indulgent album on our fourth record. Like
right.
we went all out on that and kind of like went to like, you know, this really picturesque, kind of emotive studio and like, you know, really lived within the record, man, and like wanted to push our boundaries out and all this kind of shit. But like that record, as much as I love that record as a piece of work and like, you know, it's something that we gave everything to. I don't necessarily think it was what fans wanted, but I feel like every mm-hmm. band's allowed one of those where they get to like push the boat out a little bit. You know, last record, we didn't want to write a pop punk record, really. We were kind of like, yeah, it's not really, I don't know, the stuff that's coming out isn't as interesting as this other stuff that we're writing. But this time around, it was kind of like, all right, post-pandemic, we gained a lot of perspective on just like
yeah.
who we are, what people expect out of us, what we want. You know, maybe we were being self-indulgent to think we're not going to write a pop-punk record. But I think with that perspective post-pandemic, and you're like, no, we should just be a good pop-punk band. around. That's what people love. That's ultimately what we love. And maybe we were being naive to think we could subvert shit. And like, maybe we did to an extent, but I think getting out of our system meant that this time around we were like, yeah, okay, cool. We're ready to write a pop punk record now. Like, maybe there's some fresh ideas floating around and there's, you know, a new perspective. And so, yeah, we just wanted to write a short, sharp, in your face kind of just pop punk record, really. And, you know, see how that went with fans, because it felt like we were kind of, you know, again, I keep talking about fucking pandemic, but off the back of it, like, we kind of had to claw our way back a little bit. I feel like a lot of bands maybe did, like, kind of had to get back up to speed. And it felt like this record has put us back, you know, or maybe even beyond kind of where we were before. So it's definitely, definitely on the right track with it, and just had a lot of fun with it, really. Ultimately, like, when we eventually got around to like a comfortable recording situation, because we ended up doing it ourselves. That's when I think it started to feel good, and we knew we were on the right track.
Yeah. Well, that's my next question, because, you know, when you read the stuff the publicist sends and it's like, oh, you know, you made this record, you know, in your own space, you know, in your warehouse, kind of on your own watch, you know, kind of like vintage Neck Deep with your brother at the helm, you know, looking over his shoulder. It's like, okay, this is awesome. Like, and I totally get that. But then when I dug a little deeper, I read that that's not how it started. You actually started making the record in LA. I don't know which producer it was with, but you ended up scrapping the whole thing. And, you know, and that's like, people don't realize, I think, what a big deal that is to do, because like, just the logistics of all that, you know, you're living there, you're paying money to be there. It's a lot far from home. And, you know, there's a timeline on when you want the record to come out, because you've got an Ali Pally show, you know, like, we'll talk about that later. Like, all these like moving parts. And for you guys just to go, yeah, no, not feeling it. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. We knew that amongst ourselves too. Like, it took a minute, I think, for us all to fully admit, like, what we all knew was kind of going down. And it wasn't that, I mean, it was weird. It was a weird time. Like, I think it was just one of those. We went, you know, with a producer that we knew, and we just weren't, it wasn't necessarily the songs themselves, you know, a lot of the songs kind of stayed roughly how they were going in. But it was just the way that it sounded. And it was, I think as well, that environment as well was kind of, wasn't conducive to us feeling great and then therefore being stoked on the songs. We were like stuck way out in Calabasas, like in the ass end of Calabasas, like nothing really around, nothing really to do. And like, you know, you kind of go out to LA partially, like obviously you go out there to make a great record because there's a ton of great producers, but you know, you want to hang out too. You want to feel inspired and you want to, you know, and there was just none of that. We were just super uninspired, you know, didn't want to be where we were. And yeah, we weren't getting the sounds out of the record that we'd hoped, you know, and maybe just, you know, we didn't have the same like kind of interlocking vision, I guess, as the person we were working with. And so it was like, right, you know, that fateful morning when we're all dreading going into the studio because we've all been saying like, the vibe's not great. Like, you know, we're not super stoked on what we get. And then it's kind of like pulling the trigger on that.
Wow.
Kind of sucked. Yeah. We all had to sit around and, you know, it was an emotional one in terms of, you know, we'd put so much work into it. It's stressful because it set us back a month and, you know, 6 weeks maybe. And like you say, we wasted all that money on fucking accommodation and the sessions and everything. And so, yeah, big call, but ultimately it worked out. Like, I think we knew, that it wasn't working and we had to rack our brains for like other options. And the option we kept coming back to was like, we can do this ourselves. Like, we can make a record like Seb, but has made many records in his own right anyway.
Yeah.
We have a space that we're paying for that we're doing it. Like, surely that's the move. And I think, yeah, you know, no one knows us better than we know ourselves. And I think as soon as we got into our studio back home, I was like, this is how it should feel. You know, this is no one's holding back. Everyone's, you know, pretty much on the same page. And especially working with Seb, like Seb, while he was never like an official member of Neck Deep, like he was there when the band started, you know, the band started in his bedroom. And so having him who you know, kind of me and him are on a little bit of a telepathic thing when it comes to like what we know sounds good and what we're looking for in something. It's almost like that kind of inexplain, like how do you explain a feeling or a sound? And to have someone that you can bounce off of that immediately with is like a million times better than someone that you've maybe got to like wrestle ideas with and kind of like compromise on things that maybe you don't want to compromise on. And it's like, yeah, it's I think doing it ourselves was definitely the move, and it means that you can make the record that you want to make. And if people find a producer that they love working with and that shares that vision, then fucking A, you know, take that all the way. But you know, we have that in the band ultimately, so
yeah, it's, yeah, wow,
win-win for us. Yeah,
yeah, totally. No, I mean, working with your brother, obviously somebody you know so well and have known on so many different levels, right? And growing up listening to probably a lot of the same bands
for sure. Yeah.
You know, like all that. It's like, I'm sure when you're in the vocal booth, he doesn't even like, if he stops it, it's like, you know why.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's like if he doesn't even have to really produce you, it's just like,
yeah,
he, you know, he could just almost look at you and you kind of know what to do. It's like, that's a really beautiful thing that yeah, you know, people can have, whether they're in, yeah, you know, whether they're it's a producer, from not in your band or in your band, that's also your brother. That's pretty yeah, wild.
Well, yeah, we love the same things about music, like the little kind of the micro little nuances, little inflections of how you say words, or like a little bit of emotion that comes out on a take, or like the way that you say a certain word or something, we'll know like whether it's good or whether it's gold, you know, or whether it sucks, you know. Well, immediately we'll be flicking through takes to be like, okay, which one of these are we going to use as the main vocal? And it will both be like skip, 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 skip. And then on the same one, we'll both be like, that one was good.
There you go.
Cool. Yep. Da, 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 da. And like, it's just, yeah, we look for the same things. I think like we both grew up, like I was for a long time, you know, before Neck Deep, I was known locally by other dudes and bands as like Seb's brother. And I was only ever Seb's brother. And I was like the comic relief in the studio every now and again, like, cause it used to be in my parents' house. And you know, if he was recording a band, that's how I met West, our guitarist. He was recording his old band, and I would go up and I would probably offer to do something stupid for a cig, or like just stick my head in and just hang out and be an idiot. And so, you know, that's where I kind of cut my teeth on how to write songs and how songs are made and, you know, how a band works and that sort of stuff. And even going back further than that, like Seb would be finding music and would be going, listen to this. And then I would go, oh, that's fucking cool, blah, 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 blah. And then I would maybe, for every 10 bands he found, I would have one suggestion and be like, I got this band. And then, you know, but I would ultimately listen to a lot of the stuff that he would show me, and we would sit and listen to music together. Like, it's kind of how we've always done things. So
yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. No, I kind of wondered about that. Like, I think maybe when we talked all those years ago, you know, when he wasn't, you know, in the band yet, but you were still, you know, working with him and stuff. And I always kind of always like, isn't this like obvious elephant in the room? Like, why isn't he just in the band? Yeah. Is it because there's like, oh, he's just my little brother. And like, cause there must've been a point when maybe him or his friends or the scene, like they didn't really, at least at first, maybe take it as seriously or take you as seriously, right? Until it's like, oh shit, wait a second. This is not just good, it's blowing up.
Yeah, yeah. I think Seb was our biggest fan early days. I think love Seb that. Did so much for us. Like, you know, he would run our socials. Cause like I think the reason Seb wasn't in the band is because, you know, he'd been in bands growing up and, you know, not found much success, and then went to college to do like just music theory or what, not music theory, music production. And, you know, pretty quickly outgrew his college course and was like, yeah, well, fuck it, I'm going to start recording a band. And I think just found his feet recording bands. I think he always said, like, you know, he's been with his partner now for like 15, 16 years, something like that. So like he was a little homebody. He was happy with the setup he had.
Right.
He always said like being in a band's like having another girlfriend, but it's like having four other girlfriends. So it's like, yeah, I kind of get that. And I just don't think he went to stress. So like I think we were all just as surprised as each other when Seb said like, hey, yeah, I want to be in the band. Like that was a
put his name in the hat.
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. And it was immediately like, yeah, obviously that's what we should do. So it kind of was always a bit of an elephant in the room, but like, I think everyone was just so resigned to like, Seb's just happy doing his thing. So, Yeah, it definitely feels really, really good now that we've got Seb in the band, like, as well, because he doesn't, it's not just like he brings a good vibe to the table and like knows us all well. It's like he, you know, he can fucking make an album for us, which is as a weapon in a band's arsenal. That's like, that's huge. Yeah. Having someone who can fully produce a record.
Totally.
So yeah, it feels very complete now. It feels like it should have always been the move, but you know, things work in mysterious ways. He came along when he came along, and yeah, it's all good vibes now. So
nice. Yeah. So with this record, did you have all these songs done before when you went to LA, or did you have a bunch that got scrapped, or did you write with other people? Like, cause I'm a maniac and I looked at all the credits on all the songs, and it's like, it's you guys wrote all the stuff. There's no outside writers. Mm-hmm. So how did that work?
We always, like, whenever we go into a studio, we like to do some work in the studio. Like, we like to see kind of whether the person we're working with has ideas, or whether just like retracking stuff brings up any new ideas or whatever. And sometimes I like to see a song like in its almost finished form, like, cause I'll work on the instrumentals with everybody else to like see how they work for vocals. And so we do leave, like, I would say we go into the studio a lot of the time with like 60-70% of the record kind of done.
Okay.
Like, we know what songs we want. There's maybe some songs that are like 100% done. There's others that maybe need some work. And so, yeah, generally we can pull from like a big vault. We have like a huge Dropbox with just like hundreds of ideas in them that span back, you know, since the start of the band, really. And
wow,
we'll use that as a basis, or we'll start something new, and we'll always do it with Seb. That demo process, like, always starts with Seb or Sam demoing stuff at home. And so, yeah, like most of the songs were fairly written, you know. I like to kind of struggle in the studio with lyrics. I like to be able to sit while a song's being made and kind of think of things as they go. But yeah, some of them are pretty old demos. I want to say like maybe 6-7 years old, but I would have loved the record to be longer. I would have, you know, I think we all were aiming for maybe 11 or 12 songs, but it was just like, I think that 6-week setback having to reset maybe took the time away from being able to do that. So yeah, you know, it's rare that we have everything done going into the studio.
Gotcha.
It's, can be a,
yeah, man.
I think it stresses us out a little bit, thinking like, God, we have to write the whole record before we go in. I think like we like to kind of work a little bit on the fly, have a good groundwork, and then yeah.
I gotta say, man, I like that the record's 10 songs. Like, I don't know. I've always liked that. Our first record was 10 songs for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just feel like that's sometimes all you need to say.
Yeah.
And also, like, the second that, you know, the record was done, I wanted to listen to it again, you know?
Yeah.
And that like, there's something to be said for that too in these days of streaming and, you know, re-listenability.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. So I'm all about it, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, I think it paid off too. I think it suits the record. I think the record has a good overall kind of like feel to it of just like, this is us just being a pop punk band. It doesn't need to be any more than that. Here's 10 new songs. Go and enjoy them. And if anything, like, you know, like I said, because we can do our own shit now whenever we want. Like, you know, we could, when this tour's up, we could go in and start working on new stuff straight away, you know, and be as prolific as we want to be. We're not under any sort of like scheduling, kind of constraints or anything like that. So yeah, I think maybe the fact that it's 10, like you say, in a way, maybe people want, it leaves people wanting more a little bit, you know, it keeps people excited. It keeps people on their toes rather than like, okay, I've had my fill. I've got 15 new songs or whatever, or like, you know, maybe even more than that. But when it's 10, like you say, I think, you know, 35 minute record, it's very, very, lots of replay value. And yeah, I think it has worked out, but I still think for our own sake, cause we had a couple songs that were like nearly there, but it's like, do we rush them out and put them on this record? Do we like stress ourselves out trying to get this in crunch time? Or do we want to like work on these songs without the pressure of like having to get them done? And I think that probably played off because, you know, I'd rather put out 10 good complete songs than like,
of course,
12 where like one or two of them maybe fell short a little bit. So, yeah. And it just means we can save it for future stuff too. So,
Yeah. So, well, now you've got your own warehouse space. I was reading about this too, the neck deep headquarters, if you will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, having everything under one roof too. I mean, if you've kind of got it set up for recording now, rehearsals.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you're like going to start doing like printing your own merch there or things like that, but that's all like a huge asset for a band to have too. I mean, you can kind of go in and you could record songs all the time. It doesn't have to be like, oh, we're making a new record. You could just go in and do, you know, a couple songs.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that we've always kind of dreamed of, even outside of like band stuff. Like it's cool to have like a little hideout, you know, a little den with full of fun boy things, you know, like that's kind of a good thing too. It's just like, it's a good place for us to hang out. And, we've wanted it for so long. And we used to spend a lot of time up in Sheffield at our friend, you know, While She Sleeps. Obviously, I think you know those boys quite well.
Very well, yeah.
We used their practice space a lot for years. We were storing some gear there, practicing there, and, you know, got close with those guys and were constantly, you know, like, God, we'd love to do something like this, blah, blah, blah. And they were always so supportive of it too. And so like, yeah, this is how you do it. You need to look for this and da, 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 da. Eventually, like literally just this golden spot came up, which is like right in the middle of mine and our guitarist West's house. Our drummer and Powell's and West live together. So they're like, you know, 5-minute walk away. I can fucking ride my bike there. And
awesome.
Yeah. It's just made us way more productive. It's saving us a lot of money. It's just, it gives us a lot more freedom too. Cause I think, you know, it's stuff that people don't consider if they're not in a band is like, oh, right. How much like a practice costs, how much it costs to store gear. Because it's not just like,
totally, man.
Oh, we've got a, you know, we'll rent out this practice room and we'll lug all our gear. It's like, no, okay, well we're storing our gear there. So that costs like maybe a couple hundred a month or whatever. And then we got to find, you know, then we got to get all our crew down for the day to set up and get their shit together. And that's day rate. So we're paying crew. And then there's hotels for crew and band and everything. So I think it worked out that we were paying like every time we wanted to do a practice, it was like $2,000 to $3,000 or something like that, which is like fucking insane to just practice. Yeah, you know? Yeah. So it was like, right. So now every time, now we're just paying rent basically and for crew and stuff. But because the, you know, the infrastructure is there where like, everyone can stay at houses or whatever. It's so much fucking cheaper now. So much cheaper, much more fun. It can be a pain sometimes. Like the place we got's like a little bit old and leaky. We've had a few burst pipes and all that kind of shit, has been, you know, been fun. But I think, you know, it's all the studio and practice side of things is all up and running now. We've got like a fully refurbished practice room and like the studio is all good to go. So it's just like the kitchen now, but
okay,
that's not super essential, but you know, we're all pretty foodie. So we want a nice place to go and eat and snack and hang out in somewhere that isn't, you know, a studio.
I love that, dude. Well, I mean, you could probably, you know, rent it out to other bands to use, right? If you have other rooms, if it's big enough and all that, and you know, actually like
we talked about that for sure.
Like, you know, passive income.
Yeah. Well, we said like, you know, it's a good spot for like, say, you know, some friends, bands from over in the States are coming over and they're like, oh, yo, you know, we need to get a huge merch delivery somewhere. But, you know, because the UK does like, it has like decent practice spaces and places where you can do like production days and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you would want to do it with in another band spot over like, you know, a big kind of corporate, but you know, like a business's spot. Like you can hang out, you can smoke in our place, like you can drink, you can make as much noise as you want, you can fucking, you know, there's less rules. You're not like under somebody's thumb. So it's like, we've talked about like, yeah, if you want somewhere comfortable to come and hang out and you know, we're nearby so we can look after you and stuff. Like, yeah, we talked about that.
Sick.
And even just generally, you know, who knows if we've got that place in 10, 15 years and like, you know, maybe we're touring less, it can be one of those things. It's just like, it's just a practice space for local bands and stuff, whatever. If like, you know, if you want to come and there's a studio and a practice space, like, you know, make it the best practice spot in the area. And there's plenty we can do with it for sure.
Hell yeah.
Talked about making the kitchen fucking contentable, you know, like see if any foodie chefy people want to come in and shoot some shit in the kitchen. Like, yeah, why not?
I love that. Yeah. Bring in Ramsey. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's get him in there. I love that, man. Well, a couple of tunes I wanted to bring up from the new record too that I think they're just great. And I think they're kind of like maybe a little different for you, especially We Need More Brick. This song definitely more politically driven for you guys. Kind of a cool moshable song that's like kind of anthematic. How's this one going over live?
Really, really well. Yeah, live that one goes down super, super well. And like you say, moshable. I think like it has that kind of like Foyer Strong edge to it. I think it's maybe, but very blinky as well. Mark Hoppus was hyping this song up a lot, which was a dream because we were absolutely just trying to rip Blink off. So the fact that he loves it is great. But yeah, and I think as well, like, you know, there's a strong message there as well. So hopefully people feel a sense of like, a sense of duty in a way, listening to that song. You know, I feel like it's quite a hopeful, like you say, quite anthemic song. So I think it does make people want to move. And yeah, it's talking about stuff that's very relevant. And I think it's always tough to write political songs. Political songs are like, you've got to kind of get it spot on with the messaging. It can very easily be kind of a bit whiny or a bit like, you know, a bit preachy.
Right.
And so I think we managed to get the tone right with it.
Totally.
You know, I don't think it went too hard either way. I think, you know, you can listen to that song no matter what your outlook is. And I think it'll apply and it'll be applicable to things. And ultimately, as long as people are thinking and feeling something when they're listening to our music, that's always the aim. I have a strong dislike of just like nothing music, like songs that don't mean anything,
right.
Bands that don't like have much, like, I don't know, you know, that's just my personal preference as well. And so that's always been a thing of ours. It's just like,
yeah,
I want people to feel something and know that we stand for something. It's, you know, it's
yeah,
pop punk, but it's punk rock too. And that should, you know, that's always been political. So.
Yeah, no, when shit is like just totally vague in a song and you're like, well, what's the point, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, if I ask you what this is about, you should have a pretty clear answer for me, you know? And I won't put anybody on the spot, but I do wonder sometimes when I'm reading lyrics, like, is this just words, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. 100%. Yeah, like, you know, and trust, like, you know, a melody on its own, a catchy melody, it can stand on its own for sure. Like so much pop music is that, you know, to the point now where pop music is just taking other pop songs and saying, we're going to do that chorus, but say it's like an homage to,
I know.
You know what I mean? Just say, it's a nod to this famous chorus. It's like, or you just couldn't write a chorus, so you sung that over it and thought, yeah, I'll use that. So in the age of just rehashing choruses, I think it's important that, you know, bands stand for something. And I think, you know, a lot of the big kind of pop artists that are coming out now, I think do have something about them, or there's a good handful of them who, like, you know, there's a message there. There's something for people to enjoy. There's personality. It's not just meaningless words and bullshit. And so, yeah, I think that's pretty crucial for us, I would say. And I think that's what builds long-standing fan bases too. When you make music that like genuinely connects with people on a level beyond just like music, you know, and it reminds them of a time, or whether it's good or bad, and it's kind of maybe helps them out, or, you know, just maybe helps change a perspective on any given situation. I think that's when you have fans that stick around for a long time. So like, okay, that band meant more to me than just like,
of course,
good music. You know, that's how I feel about all, like, if when I City in Color, for example, is a huge one for me. It just helped me through a very depressing fucking phase of my life. But like, I will, you know, I'll always, even though I'm not as in the loop as I was, I will always look at Dallas Green and think he's one of my fucking idols. Like, I would go and see him every time he rolls through, and I'll probably cry every time I fucking see him. And, you know, I'll always be a fan because of the memories that I, and the kind of, the memories that I have attached to that music. So if, you know, that's how I see music. I want music to feel something, and I'm just, just hope that that translates to our fans, really.
Absolutely, so. It does. There's no question. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, you guys are playing 3,500 people tonight. And it's not just because, oh, yeah, they kind of sound like Blink and we like pop punk. It runs a lot deeper than that, man. A lot deeper.
Yeah, thanks.
So
thanks, man.
100%. That's great to see. The other tune I wanted to highlight, mostly because I love the video so much, Heartbreak of the Century. Mm-hmm. Big tune, a lot of fun, and blowing up, a lot of big streaming numbers too on this one.
Yeah, and it goes down well live. Again, another one that went down really well live, kind of off the bat, really. I think it has a super singable chorus to it. But yeah, again, I think just classic pop punk kind of done well. Pop punk's one of those genres where like there's a very fine line between it being really bad and it being really good. And I think our band has probably straddled that line a couple times, but it's one of those, you know. I think when it's done really well, it's one of those genres that it's like everyone's kind of guilty pleasure. Like everyone likes Blink, everyone probably likes a couple new fan songs, everyone likes Green Day, you know, everyone is nostalgic for the early 2000s. And so I think when it's done well and it hits on all those kind of notes, it kind of sucks people in. And I think that's, you know, I'd like to think that's one of our better pop punk songs. I mean, fans seem to think so. Just generally the new stuff in general seems to be slotting in really well with all of the usual crowd pleasers. So yeah. And that's one of them. Yeah, it's a staple. Yep. Now it's a staple in the set. And
awesome.
Yeah, it's a banger.
No, I saw you're playing 7 new songs, 7 out of 10 new songs every night. Yeah. On this set. That says something, man, right there. That's
yeah,
awesome.
We've been toying around with the set list a little bit. I think we've played 9 out of 10. There was some that we've been taking in and out just to toy with, but there's one more that we need to play, which was a big sleeper on the record. Like we didn't think that this song would be super, super popular, but it's ended up being like one of the more called for live songs, which is, the closer on the record.
Oh, it's great.
Moody Weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone loves that song, man. It's like, we put that on there. It's like, yeah, chorus is good. And it's a little kind of vibe change. It feels like it eases you out of the album nicely, but people fucking love that song. We've had so many requests for it. So I think that'll be the next one that we pull out.
It's funny because I when I listened to your record all the way through a few days ago and I heard that song last, that was when I said, I got to listen to this record again. It was like when that song finished, I was like, I got to listen to this record again. It's like, you know.
Fuck yeah.
So it's a really good thing, man.
Thanks.
So a couple more questions. If you got, I know you're busy, but if you got a couple more minutes.
Yeah, I'm good.
I just want to ask you about some of the things you got coming up. Obviously, your big headliner at Ali Pally in London, that is a big milestone for you guys, right? It's your biggest
ever
headliner. Over 10,000 people will be there. And then later in the year, when we were young, which record do they have in you do?
We're doing Life's Not Out to Get You, which was like our breakout kind of record. Yeah. So that'll be fun. People love that record. And I think it's nice to do it for when we were young. Like we did a 10-year anniversary last year of our first two EPs. And like it started off really fun, like being able to play these old songs and like, yeah, this is really nostalgic. And it actually did a lot for the mentality of the band. It was a nice reminder of where we came from. And, you know, that probably helped us with the new record too. But doing it got to a point where like we added a few more dates due to demand, and then like, you know, we threw some at the start of like a Europe run just as like a little kicker and stuff. And then it eventually got to the point of like, we can't keep falling back on this, not just yet. We still got plenty in the tank. We can't legacy ourselves, you know. So but we did a good handful of them, and it's nice to be able to do some for when we were young as well. I think we're maybe going to do like a handful of shows playing that record around the time. So
cool.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool. Going to be playing some stuff that we've probably never played live, like some songs that we just never touched on that record,
right?
Or some that like we played a couple times and everyone hated playing. It's just like we're never playing that again.
Sometimes those are the songs though that kind of like you're like, wait a second, this song's kind of sick. Like, how did we sleep on this?
Yeah. Yeah. And it can also go the other way though, where like you play a song and you're like, Jesus, why do people like this song? It's so weird. But nostalgia, I think, plays a big part in it. And yeah, I definitely was getting a little bit sick of playing some of the old stuff just because it was like, damn, man, like we're such better songwriters now, like in terms of just like how songs move, like they're much more slick,
right?
Much more like kind of complete songs. Like, God, we had such a bad habit of writing like extra long verses or doing like double long pre-choruses just because it was like, sure, yeah, let's just make that part super long. And so playing those live was crazy. Love it though. The stuff that like, And maybe that's something, it's like, I think it kind of goes both ways. Like maybe we need to listen to fans and say, okay, we'll play some of those songs. But then fans maybe don't realize that sometimes those songs don't really translate live. Like we'll have requests from fans for like, play this song, play this song, play this song. And then we play it live and it's like, that was kind of a bummer to play it. Like kind of
suck the air out of the room, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so
I know
it's a weird one. With that. So we'll see, you know, some of those songs might be good record songs. They might be bad live songs, who knows? Or maybe they'll just all be great. I would assume at that fest, they'll all be great. Cause yeah, it's the second time doing it. And we were thoroughly, kind of impressed with how well it ran last time.
I know,
it was crazy.
Right? We were there too. Yeah. Like what a good festival.
Yeah.
Like I especially with all the shit everyone was saying, like, mm-hmm. oh, it's going to be Fyre Fest and it's going to be a mess. And then it was like, other than the one day getting canceled because of the wind, it was like incredible. Like I had so much
opposite,
fun.
Yeah. So that's going to be a banger. But Ali Pally as well. Yeah. That's been in the sights for a while now. Like I think pre pandemic, we were kind of lining that one up for that record that we put out. But then, and so, you know, obviously pandemic happened and everyone was held back a couple of years. And so it's nice. It'll be the final kind of check of like, okay, we're back now. We're back where we should be. We're back where we left off. Or ahead of where we left off in a way, you know, because that was the goal. Pre-pandemic was always to that would be our next big show. And so this, when we play this, it'll signify like, yeah, cool, we're fully moving back in the direction we need to be in. But yeah, 10,000, it's a lot. Like in a lot of ways, like I'm basing the success of this record on like whether that show sells out or not, you know, like if the record's good enough that it sells the show out, I'll be like, all right, cool. That's it for me now. Like, you know, cause it's been in our sights for so long that like,
for sure,
that's the thing, you know? So,
I mean, it's going to be accumulation of your entire career. Right. And like all your fans that have supported you in London. And I mean, people have come from all over the UK for it, all over Europe, really, to see you play there. It'll be just be a beautiful moment. It's going to be, that's going to be really special.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite venues. It's all it's like 10,000 like standing as well, like all flat, so it's like no seats, like everyone getting down. We've played it I think twice before. I think we did it with Bring Me and we've done it with I think A Day to Remember maybe, and like both times playing those shows it's just like multiple mosh pits, just like 5-6 mosh pits all happening at once. Just is so big. And it's very iconic in the UK too. So
totally,
it'd be a very, very good one to check off the list for sure.
Totally, man. Well, thanks. I have one last question. I actually talked to your boy Saxel Rose yesterday.
Yeah, nice.
He's the first ever non-lead singer to be on my podcast.
Wow.
Because when I asked, I was like, I asked his manager, does he sing? And they said, well, his instrument certainly sings. And I was like, good enough. Let's have him on the show. So I asked him if he had a question for you. And he didn't really have one, but he did say something about a story with Lil Wayne.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, Saxel got himself in a little trouble one time. He came out when we toured with Blink and Lil Wayne, which is still crazy to say.
Yeah.
He came out to... It might have been the Maryland date or it might have been somewhere else and he was just in the area and he was so fucking hyped on Wayne. He was like, oh my God. And like ran up to him and was like, can I get a picture, blah, blah, blah. And we ended up getting told off. He got his picture with Wayne. Wayne was like, yeah, it's cool. But yeah, Wayne's security TM people were not super happy. So we got in a little trouble that day. But
wow.
Yeah. I don't blame him. You got to shoot your shot, you know? I mean, I wasn't going to do it. I was needed to see him every day. I didn't want to get in trouble. But he was like, fuck it. If I never get the chance to fucking meet like one of the most legendary rappers of all time, then just gonna shoot my shot, but yeah. Yeah, Saxel actually, for what it's worth, has got a great singing voice. I've heard him sing.
Oh, really?
He is fucking crazy talented. Yeah, he's so talented, man. He can fucking do anything. He shreds on guitar,
yeah,
plays drums, like plays multi-instrumentalist, just like very, very naturally gifted musician, like born to do this shit. So yeah, he's a legend.
Amazing. Amazing. I love it so much, man. Well, dude, thank you for taking the time on a show day, and anything else to tell the people before I let you go?
All good.
Get to your Boston people.
Just thank you. Thank you for all the love on the new shit.
Of course.
There's plenty more where that came from. And yeah, just if you're in the UK or Europe and you want to come and see the best Neck Deep show ever, come and see us at Ali Pali. Is this going to be out before? Is this going to be out soon?
Two weeks.
I think we might have just finished up in the US, but if you came to see us on our US headline, thank you very much. Yeah. Love you.
And Japan, see you soon. Japan coming up too. If anybody's going to be in Japan.
Yeah, Japan. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Japan was some 41. And then next US dates will be around when we were young. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Perfect. And I'll see you at some festivals too in Europe. This I see you got Veinstream and a bunch of other ones like that. So I'll see you there, man.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah, definitely. See you there, man.
All right. Do you got a favorite from the new record? I'll play the people a song.
Ooh, I'm gonna go for a little deep cut just because people heard a lot of the singles. So I'm gonna play They May Not Mean To, But They Do.
All right, here it is. New Neck Deep on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks, Ben.
Cheers. Bye.
Godspeed, little sinner. Dragged me to church to eat Jesus Christ. I can be a little pessimistic. I can be a little critical sometimes. Can't sleep, so you whisper. Now I see through all those little lies, but I didn't know better. But now I get it. I'm sorry that I made you cry. Those signs, the cops came by. Mama tried.
New music from Neck Deep from their self-titled album out now. They may not mean to, but they do. Ben is just the best. I want to thank Ben and his whole team for coming back on the show after 7.5 years. Picking his brain is always a treat. I think they'll be done in the US by the time this is out. However, yes, if you're in Japan, lucky you, go see them in Japan. But yeah, if you are in the UK or Europe, March 28th, you're going to want to see them play at Ali Pali. I've talked about this on the podcast a little bit, about how much it means to UK bands where they play in London and when they make that level up to the next venue, how big a deal it is. So Neck Deep at Ali Pali is going to be an event. So yes, March 28th, get your tickets now. It's going to be a very, very special one. Thank you everyone for listening to this one. Lots of good episodes lately. Go back, check them out. If you know, we, what is it, 350 something episodes to go enjoy. I've had fun doing every single one of them with a couple exceptions. and so thank you for that. If you enjoy the show, also feel free to write a review on iTunes, on Apple. That means a lot too. Hit the subscribe button if it's Spotify or whatever you're listening to. That goes a long way as well. And of course, I will be back next week with another episode. So stay tuned for that. And you know what? Because I'm going to play in Bloom, because we got to get a little Saxl Rose, Ben Barlow, back-to-back episode collab, you know? So that's how we'll end this thing. Here it is, Neck Deep, once again, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week. Together, if you only